The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Congress meets to count the Electoral College votes, but some Republicans are planning to object. And the early results from Georgia's runoffs show the Democratic Senate candidates in good position. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnist Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. At 1 p.m. today, Wednesday, Congress is scheduled to meet in a joint session to officially tally the votes from the Electoral College, with Vice President Mike Pence presiding over the proceedings. Generally, in past, this has not been a news-making affair, but this time it's expected to be. States have certified 306 electors for Joe Biden, which is a comfortable majority. 270, of course, is needed to become the president. But here's what President Trump is saying on his Twitter feed. Quote, the vice president has the power to reject fraudulently chosen electors. That's a tweet from Tuesday. This morning, President Trump followed up and he said, quote, if Vice President Mike Pence comes through for us, we will win the presidency, unquote. Kim, what do you make of the president's legal analysis there?
Yeah, I don't see where he gets that legal analysis at all. I was actually reading a very useful editorial that was in the New York Sun today, talking about the role of the vice president and making some really interesting historical points about what the vice president's actual role is. But it seems here his job is limited to opening the certificates of the electoral vote that the Constitution requires be sealed in the state where they were certified and then sent to the government. And I can't really see any role for him beyond opening those envelopes. Certainly not one that would in any way give him the power to override an entire election. You are seeing different scholars out there talk about different roles. We're having this interesting moment where we talk about the Constitution, but this is simply not a power he has. And we've had some news articles suggesting he pushed back about that to the president. We don't know what he'll do today, but I find it hard to believe that Vice President Pence would think it was in his power to do anything like this.
And I mean, like a good originalist, I guess I go to the text of the 12th Amendment, which is the amendment that refines the workings of the Electoral College. And it says that the vice president who's presiding over this joint session, quote, shall in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives open all the certificates and the votes shall then be counted, unquote. And important to note that the last part of that is in the passive voice. The votes shall then be counted, Bill. That, you know, so it doesn't even say that the vice president counts the votes, let alone that he can choose which ones to count and which ones to discard.
Excuse me. Well, that's my reading of the amendment, too. I'm not a constitutional scholar. I will say that one thing is it hasn't been tested in court yet. I think that is the view that would prevail. I mean, I also think it's just part of a larger theater that's going to end as we thought it would at the beginning. You know, I think in a few days this will be forgotten.
I also want to push a little bit, though, on this idea that Trump is raising about fraudulent electors. Because as I see it, there are no fraudulent electors. After the voting was done, local and state officials did their canvasses. In some cases, Georgia, for example, Wisconsin, they did some recounts, and then they certified the results. And that's different than, I mean, the precedent that a lot of people are raising is the 1876 election, that contested election. But in that case, there were at least some competing slates of quasi-official electors. You know, in Oregon, the governor and the secretary of state disagreed about who the electors were. In Florida, the governor signed off on some electors, and then his successor came into office and switched and signed off on some different electors. And Kim, there's nothing at all analogous to that here.
No, and I keep coming back to the fact, and this keeps getting lost. You know, we are a federalist system, and we leave it to the states to come up with their election laws. And one of the things that is really notable to me here is that the federal government is actually, and some of these senators and House members that are talking about objecting to this, or suggesting that the vice president of the United States has the ability to overrule these state election laws, they're forgetting that there are 50 state legislatures out there, and any one of them could have stepped up and voted to have claimed that or to done something with their slate of electors to have said to have overridden the results of their election. That is where the power fundamentally, first and foremost, rests with state legislatures. None of them have done so. And, you know, the framers, when they looked at this, they didn't trust the federal government with the power to retroactively overrule the states and their election results. And, you know, this is, I think, is one of the things that sits poorly with me as we hear some of these Republicans talking about objecting to this and using the power of the federal government to overrule election results, because these are the same people that most of the time are talking so passionately correctly about federalism. And I think it's notable that those Republicans who are objecting to this process, this is the argument that they are putting forward, that this is not something that is for the national government to do. The power for this rests in the states.
Well, I agree with that analysis. Let's put Mike Pence aside, because I think Bill's right that it's unlikely that Vice President Pence thinks it's in his unilateral power to throw at electors. But then you go to the second part, which is this law called the Electoral Count Act, which describes a process for the counting of electors and for the House and Senate to object to electors. And as I understand the process, if one member of the House and one member of the Senate, if they both object in writing to the counting of electoral votes from a specific state, say Georgia, just to pick one, then the joint session is supposed to break and the House and the Senate are supposed to go their separate ways and consider the arguments. And if they both agree that those electors are not proper, then purportedly those electors are not supposed to be counted. But I think the argument that Kim raises is a good one, that, you know, did the founders really think that it's Congress's job to essentially decide which electors are valid, which is choosing the president?
No, I don't think so. Look, the whole system that was set up in 1776 and right after, and then by the Constitution, is to vest most of the power in the states, in the people, which they thought best represented by the states. You know, as a corollary to what Kim was saying, look, I think there's a lot of work to be done. We had a lot of problems with the election. Apart from outright fraud, but the relaxation of deadlines and the messiness and so forth, there's a lot of work to be done. And I think the way to start that work is to go back to the Constitution and not to just like favor a federal role because that might give us the outcome we want this time, but to get back to a fair process. And I think that's what Republicans in the long term really have to set as their priority. There's a lot of work to be done, primarily at the state level, but there's some federal areas. For example, I think the Supreme Court should still take up the Pennsylvania case about a court changed deadline for ballots, you know, when that runs clearly against the Constitution. But I think we have a lot of work to be done to do right, to restore trust in the system, and to make it fair and to make it clear and transparent, which I don't think it was. I don't believe in the massive fraud that they that some people allege. But I do believe that it's messy, needlessly, and that there are a lot of problems with it, which I believe the Wall Street Journal has documented, and you particular, Kyle, for the last year. And this is a distraction to that. And my guess is, as one of our editorials put it, the real result of this would be to undermine the Electoral College. I mean, that would be I can't imagine any conservative argument for doing that.
Yeah, that's also an interesting wrinkle. And I'll read a bit of a statement by seven members of the House who are opposed this objecting to the counting of electors. And those members include a couple of Freedom Caucus guys. And Kim, here's the argument that they make, or at least part of it. They say, from a purely partisan perspective, Republican presidential candidates have won the national popular vote only once in the last 32 years. And then they go on to say, if we perpetuate the notion that Congress may disregard certified electoral votes based solely on its own assessment that one or more states mishandled the presidential election, we will be delegitimizing the very system that led Donald Trump to victory in 2016.
That's a huge point, and one we've made on our editorial pages. There's already a movement out there across the country by the left to try to end the Electoral College. And you've seen this pact growing among different states where they've been trying to chip away at it. It's not clear that that is constitutional, but you are undermining public support for the institution, which again is based on the notion of federalism. And, you know, I've seen some other Republicans make some other really pressing and important arguments, too. I mean, they go to the entire reasoning behind this movement you see to now object. And part of it is the notion that because the Constitution allows the state to appoint electors in a way that the legislature directs, the argument is that if the states therefore fail to follow the state's election law to the letter, Congress can then rule it unconstitutional and overturn it. But when you dig into that notion, first of all, again, the top authority for someone to do that, to actually attempt to vote to overrule the certified results would be the state legislatures themselves. And you've had some very good constitutional scholars note that if you're going to have Republicans who are objecting to any state certification that happened in any state that didn't follow the state's election laws to the letter, for instance, because of the pandemic, then Congress should be objecting, for instance, to the slate of electors from Texas, where the governor there changed some of the voting processes because of COVID. So you can't also just pick and choose which of these election results you're not going to take. I mean, by the way, one person actually pointed out that, you know, every member of the House would have to say their own election wasn't legitimate if they came from a state where any of the rules were changed in the run-up because they were on that same ballot. So you can't choose which races you're going to throw out. You can't choose which states you're going to throw out. I mean, none of this is consistent when you think about it, much less the question of constitutionality.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/Wall Street.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. So what is the real aim here? I mean, these people who are objecting, these Republicans who are objecting to the counting of these Electoral College votes, they know what the process is. They know that both the House and the Senate have to agree in order for the votes not to be counted purportedly under the Electoral Count Act. They know the House is controlled by Democrats, so that's not going to happen. And so, Bill, I mean, what do you think that they're driving at here?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's what I've been wondering. You know, again, from the outset, I've thought a lot of this would just be theater, going through motions that, you know, in some extraordinary circumstances might have results, but because of some of the realities that you just outlined, won't get those results here. So I think in a way we've whipped up a lot of people, raised expectations for something that's not going to happen, created a lot of bitterness, and is kind of pulling us apart at a time when at least conservatives and Republicans need to come together you know, in face of what the Biden agenda is going to be now, especially if they take both seats in Georgia. It's at best a distraction. And I think it's a real disservice.
Yeah, I mean, some of them perhaps see it as a symbolic vote because they know it's not going to succeed. And so the idea is to show some solidarity with President Trump supporters. But in that sense, I think that they're feeding some cynicism and distrust of the system, which is not a great political strategy long term. And they're proposing things that seem just impossible. So there's a statement by about a dozen senators who say they will vote to object to electors. And what they want Congress to appoint an electoral commission to conduct what they call an emergency 10-day audit of the presidential election. And then they go on to say that maybe as a result of that, state legislatures could decide to change their certifications of electors. But Kim, the Constitution sets the presidential transition, the inauguration date, as January 20th. And it is hard to imagine that any of that could happen, could get done before then.
Correct. Look, I view this as Republicans essentially asking for a do-over because we already went through this process, okay? We've had audits, we've had hand recounts, we've had legal cases go up both at the state court level, at the federal court level. People tend to forget that many of the judges that have actually rejected some of these, have gone over the evidence and found nothing, are indeed judges that were appointed by no less than Donald Trump. These are not sellouts to the Constitution. So we've had this process happen. And that's what everyone said at the beginning. Let the legal case work its way. We've now done that, come to the end of it. And yet here we have people saying, well, we want one more group of people who will go out and investigate all of this. You know, what are they likely to find in 10 days that entire armies of lawyers have not been able to find up until now? Now, some would argue that there is information that's in the hands of secretaries of states about voter rolls, et cetera. But, you know, those secretaries of states have provided some pretty good transparency about the way they have done their audits and the way that these were done. And I keep going back to Bill's point, which is there are a lot of problems that happened in the 2020 election, a lot of rules that were changed at the last minute, and a lot of questions that get to this vital issue of the sanctity of the vote. But those were decisions that were made well before the elections. Republicans should have been playing on the same playing field as Democrats, going head to head with them on these issues like ballot harvesting, et cetera. And these are fights to be having in the days as we go forward on a state by state basis about the way elections are held, or in the Supreme Court. I hope they take that case as well. But this is a kind of last ditch Hail Mary to try to change something that happened a long time ago.
Well, one last thought on this is that some of the Republicans who are objecting are saying that, you know, this is something that has happened before. And the most recent time was after the 2004 presidential election, when Democrats, including Senator Barbara Boxer, forced a vote on Ohio's electors. And Bill, I don't know that that's a great precedent. I mean, at the time, Republicans denounced it as Democratic sour grapes and also indulging of conspiracy theories about what happened in Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely right. And they were right to do so. Kim and I are kind of saying the same point. I think there's a lot of reasons for people to distrust what we've seen, not the results that there's fraud, but to distrust the way it was handled and the way people behaved. But the answer to that is not to create more distrust. You know, if we're right about these changes and so forth, it's going to take a lot of work because it will be mostly a state by state enterprise to restore some simplicity and so forth. Like, just for example, on mail-in ballots, we all know the problems with mail-in ballots. Some Western states have had mail-in ballots for a while, but they have a lot different conditions. You know, they have deadlines that mean something. I think we need to learn from this and go forward. And again, to me, all these things are distractions. I will say one thing. I think a lot of people are very bitter And I believe wrongly believe that the Republicans, that Mr. Pence, for example, can do what they're asking him to do and that these things will be fruitful. I will say not enough attention, it seems to me, has been given to why they feel that the political leaders haven't really played fairly. If you go back to the 2016 election, we still don't have the final answers, and only one lawyer has been charged with anything. And there are all sorts of things that go on. And then they're singled out as the only people. But a lot of people created this mess, and they didn't create it just in 2020. It's been brewing for a long time.
Finally, to those results from the Senate runoffs in Georgia yesterday, as we tape this, one of the two races has been called, with Democrat Raphael Warnock beating incumbent Republican Kelly Loeffler with a very narrow margin. The other race is still undecided, but Democrat John Ossoff has a bit of a lead over the incumbent Republican David Perdue, and it's a lead that some analysts are saying is probably going to be insurmountable given the votes left to count. Kim, what's your read of the results there?
Well, it does look as though we may be looking at a majority leader, Chuck Schumer. I think some of us all the way back in November warned that Republicans were headed into very dangerous territory in Georgia. They entered into this race, a lot of people trumpeting the fact that Republicans had never lost a runoff in the state. But at the same time, you had a president who was sowing a lot of seeds of distrust in terms of the election results. Even though he went down there and gave rallies, it looks as though in the end, he was not able to mobilize a big Republican turnout on the day, which is what they needed in order to win, given the remarkable efforts and money that Democrats were putting in on their side. And I think you have to ask the question of how much of that is because there were enough Republicans in the end that were protesting the presidential result, and that, you know, the president seems to have played a real role in these defeats here.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, how much of this do you put on President Trump and his efforts to contest the 2020 presidential election? I mean, he did go down and give some rallies, but talked a lot about how Georgia's voting systems, as he saw it, were rigged. So go vote. I'm not sure that message is very persuasive. Then there was the leaked call over the weekend that we talked about yesterday, where he was trying to cajole Georgia's Secretary of State into essentially changing the results of the election there. He's trying to overturn the results of the Electoral College today. How much do you think that played into what happened in these Senate runoffs?
Well, I think that's a good question. And I don't think the answer is as clear as we think. I've heard from two people in Georgia who think that the Republicans didn't use Trump enough. You know, they needed the turnout, and he had his rally, but, you know, the other side was, you know, promoting Barack Obama with ads and robocalls and so forth. So there's that argument. My view is that Trump, and it's the same view from the general election, is that Trump is a package deal. He probably turned out a lot of Republicans who would not have voted otherwise in this election. On the other hand, he probably turned out people to vote against him, or to cast a vote that they thought, that they saw was going against him, and turned off maybe enough on the margins of Republicans so that they didn't turn out. I mean, clearly the Republicans didn't get the turnout they need, or at least Kelly Loeffler didn't get the turnout she needs. And I suspect the same will happen for Mr. Perdue. So I think it's a package deal. I heard one statement, I don't know how true this is, that one out of every five voters, you know, saw this as a vote against Trump. And clearly there were a few Republicans there. And so again, the way to vote against Trump and the runoffs either was to show up and vote for the Democrats or not show up and vote for the Republicans. And so it will be interesting to parse those. I don't think we'll ever get final numbers, but I think it's the same in the general election. You know, we saw Trump got more votes for president than any Republican in history, but then Biden beat him with more votes than a Democrat in history. So, I think he turns out both sides, maybe not equally, but enough, certainly enough in these two cases where he didn't get the victories that he wanted.
All right. Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.